Okay, I guess we're on, we're recording. All right, we'll call to order the Town of Cary Beach Planning and Zoning Commission for Wednesday, May 5th, 2021. Adoption of the agenda, here we are. I'm not going to bring up the other issue, so I'm not going to recommend any.
I'll move to adopt the agenda as presented.
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye, okay. Adoption of the minutes. Take a second and go ahead and look at the minutes and see if there's anything that needs to be changed.
I do want to comment that I did read through these minutes earlier today, and I want to compliment whoever wrote them. They're very concise and well written.
That'd be better.
And when you guys are ready, I'll move to adopt the minutes.
Okay. Want to make a motion then? It's been moved. Is there a second? Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Public comments. Anybody?
Excuse Tony.
Who?
Tony. Will you excuse Tony?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Is there a motion to excuse Tony from tonight's meeting?
So moved.
Sure.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody online?
Yes, sir.
All right, closed public comments. Old business, underground utility update.
Well, I finally got the Duke to call me back. So I think we left our contact, Alex Winslow, who moved on, and Patty Pollard just called me today. We had a nice discussion. She's anxious to meet with us to talk about it. She gave me a thumbnail way to look at this. She said you can figure about $500 a foot. And she said that's on the high side to do underground. So a mile would be about $2.5 million. And if you picture a mile, that's from Alabama to K Avenue approximately. So if we looked at doing the coming into Alabama to where the HOAs have started in both the underground utility, that's about anywhere from 5/10 to 7/10 a mile. She did talk about that the FEMA does have grants and things like that. So, like I said, she just called me today. I was going to give Joe and Tony get together and find a time that she would want to meet with us. So that's still moving. We have a little clearer picture of what we're looking at as far as cost. And she didn't offer, but we also asked her to probably help with if she could find any money for us grant. So that's the first indication of what it actually costs to do this.
Okay. Does P&Z need to do anything at this point, or?
No, we went to council and got a permission to get a work order number with Duke, and that's all going under this work order number. It's just to keep track of the conversations that we're having, and if anything ever does happen, then that would be a work order that they would use to actually start any kind of activities.
Okay. So. Any comments or questions? No? Okay. Land use plan update. The survey's still out there. Joseph, do you want to add anything to that?
Wes emailed about something else maybe 2 weeks ago, and we are at over 500 responses, which we were hoping to get a total of 500 responses. So we were at 500, but still, I think, 5 or 6 weeks left to go. The survey's out there. So we're well ahead of the game.
Excellent. And the commission hasn't met, you know, until we have that.
If we want me to get to what, June 5th, I think, maybe?
Yes, June 5th, yeah. Okay. All right, 5.3, what we've all been looking for. Chapter 160D update.
All right. Anybody need to take a break? It's going to take a few minutes. Some preliminary points. You might recall our discussion from last month that 160D does several things. It
consolidates and unifies city and county land use planning and development statutory provisions into one place instead of two chapters. For example, currently 160A is cities and I think it's 153A is counties, and there's a little bit of difference here and there between the provisions. It's not a verbatim both ways. The other thing 160D does is it provides, here's the irony about 160D. One of its main intentions was to, by consolidating and unifying and filling in gaps, for lack of a better phrase, was designed to provide clearer guidance on various aspects of land use planning and development. For example, how those regulations are promulgated, how they're amended, how they're challenged, how they work, how the decisions made under those regulations are appealed. Prior to 160D, you would have to go to different places within Chapter 160A in order to answer a question. Instead of a linear deductive approach, you'd have to go to this one and skip five sections and go to this one. And 160D does accomplish a lot by bringing all those things together and addressing related items that weren't addressed in black letter law before. The irony is, in doing that, it's created its own hopscotch back and forth and has created its own uncertainty about certain items. So in one sense, it has solved the problem. In another sense, it's simply recreated the same problem in a different version. It was also interesting in working through the rewrite that I found at least two instances where the General Assembly had omitted things that it should have addressed. The second main point about 160D is it impacts all development regulations from stormwater control to driveway permits to certainly zoning and subdivision and building and inspections. If you recall, last month we looked at chapters 11 and 14, which are building and inspections and subdivisions in our code. Tonight we're going to look at three chapters, 12, which is brand new, 2 and 3. And 2 and 3, we'll look at them briefly, but they simply are extremely minor inserts that are called for by various sections of 160D. The best way to equate yourself with what 160D does is to walk through chapter 12. That's what we're going to do. When I get it up on the screen, you're going to see my handwritten notes based on the agenda application, but that's simply the easiest way for me to prepare my presentation. Here's the main thing about 160D. It does not make very many substantive changes to the law. It does make a bunch of minor modifications like I've already addressed. But there is one thing that it has done that is almost breathtaking. It has substantially increased the role of the Board of Adjustment in hearing appeals. Prior to 160D, the Board of Adjustment existed to hear appeals from enforcing the zoning ordinance and applications for variance. Now, the Board of Adjustment will hear 99.9% of appeals of administrative decisions, which could go all the way down the driveway permits if they're issued by the town. But we'll get a better understanding of that in a minute. But suffice it to say that the scope of responsibility for the Board of Adjustment has multiplied almost tenfold in terms of applicants seeking development approval not being happy with the result of that decision and appealing that decision. They all go to the Board of Adjustment. So with that in mind, let's go ahead and look at 12. And we're going to walk through it. It's on your screen. I'm not sure which agenda page this is, but...
So we're doing 12 before 2?
Yeah, 2. Let's just get... We'll do that. We'll get 2 out of the way real quickly. I'm going to go to page 5 on 2. 2 is administration.
By the way, if I could just jump in here, when I was kind of researching this whole rules and procedures thing, I actually read chapter 2, and I probably read that maybe 10 years ago, because when you actually do read chapter 2, and I'd recommend that everybody on the P&Z read chapter 2 right here, because it really does outline exactly the rules and responsibilities and the authority of the Planning and Zoning Commission. And it's fairly broad. It's actually much broader than I actually thought we were.
Yeah, we'll talk about that when we get there. But Kathleen, I moved it from 2 to 12. So the only change in chapter 2 is the position of what I moved to 12. That literally is the only change. We'll look at 13. 13 is this part of 13, section, article 20. Deals with floodplain regulations, and if you look at page 2 of those regulations, John supplied me with some model ordinance language that needed to be inserted, and it was just 2 very minor changes. Some of that is the reference to 160D, which you see in paragraph A under amended. And the other one is the other necessary change was in, you'll see some other changes which are stylistic, but on page 5 on B, we had to add in that language has been amended to, and I don't guess I'm showing all the red line changes. I'll have to work with Beth on that. But it simply referenced that 160D allows for reference to maps to be provided for by incorporating a reference to those maps and streamlines that. And that's all that that does. So 2 of 13, that's all that you've got. But let's go to 12 because that's where everything is. You'll see under 12.2.0.20D, as I've been saying all along, these provisions of 160D, which have been rewritten for the code, for the town code, affect several different chapters. 13 for floodplain, 11 for building inspections, 14 for subdivision regulations, 15 for zoning regulations. By the way, let me digress. We'll look at 15 next month. The changes are essentially strike-through changes to things that I pulled into 12. There are 2 substantive inserts, one of which I mentioned when we were talking about HBC. But it's 90% done, but I wasn't able to finish it in time for tonight. So we'll look at that next month and get that out of the way. Council will get a full presentation in May. Public hearing will be in June, and there'll be a special meeting probably in the last week of June following the public hearing to adopt these amendments. But getting back to the amendments, 12.02.020B, the provisions of this chapter supplement specific provisions in other chapters regulating land use and development. C, the enactment of this chapter and of chapter 160D shall not require the readoption of any KPC chapters or ordinances enacted before July 1, 2021, which is the effective date of 160D. We're okay with 160A until July 1. But that's an interesting paragraph, because throughout the 160D statutes, and they start, 160D starts with the 100s and ends with the 1400s. So there's a whole bunch of statutes in 160D. But they all use this phrase. They all say, anything that you, any development regulation that you adopt pursuant to this chapter. Well, that raised the question, do we have to go back and re-adopt everything because of the way that was phrased throughout all the 160D statutes? And fortunately, I found a sentence in one of those statutes that said, no, you don't have to reenact those. I got rid of that language throughout and plugged that provision in here so we were very clear on that. But it's the definitions that really explain what 160D does. Look at administrative decision. A decision made, you can read what it is, but look at the decisions made in the implementation, administration, or enforcement of development regulations. Basically, an administrative decision is anything that's not quasi-judicial. So building permits, the approval of subdivisions, that's an administrative decision for this town. If you go to the next page, the other one that is a major factor in 160D is development approval. In the middle of that definition, development approvals include but are not limited to zoning permits, site plan approvals, special use permits, variances, and certificates of appropriateness, which are HPC. Also includes all other regulatory approvals required under the town's development regulations. Development permit, you can see that all these things, A through M, are subject to 160D. Development regulation is the other main one because that's the phrase that's used most often. Keep in mind that a zoning regulation is a development regulation. A subdivision regulation is a development regulation. And you can see all the other ones. Zoning regulations, subdivision, erosion and sedimentation control, floodplain, flood damage, stormwater control, historic preservation, housing code, state building code enforcement, or any other regulation, they are all development regulations and they are all subject to 160D. And here's the crux of the matter. A decision under a development regulation, which includes all those that I've just told you, unless it's a quasi-judicial matter, which is simply appeals, variances, special use permits, and COA, a decision under all of the other development regulations, and you can see the scope of those regulations, they are all now being able to appeal those decisions to the Board of Adjustment. So if somebody doesn't get a decision that they like under our stormwater control regulations, they go to the Board of Adjustment. Prior to these changes, you could only go to the Board of Adjustment for decisions about enforcing the zoning ordinance and variances. So the Board of Adjustment has just opened up tremendously about what can be appealed there. The next page, evidentiary hearing, that's a quasi-judicial situation. Legislative is when town council amends, adopts, or repeals a development regulation, not just zoning, but development regulation. We saw how broad that was. The definition of property is useful because that includes structures. I refer you in your own time to what the quasi-judicial decision is as defined. When you see the yellow highlights, those are place markers for me. That's some additional work that I need to do that doesn't pertain to our discussion tonight. If you go to the next page, 1202040, I'm in court quite a bit, and any time I'm in court, I'm governed by the North Carolina Rules of Civil Procedure, which is nothing but deadlines. do this by this time, do this by this time, you can do this by that time. One of the things that has always been most helpful for me in, I don't even know how long I've been practicing, 30 years of practice, they have a provision in those rules about how to correctly count time. So I've included that in 160D, and that applies to any development regulation in the code that sets forth time limits. Now you know precisely how to count those days. The next check mark is on the next page, which would be page 5 of my document. Development approvals, and let's go back for a minute. Let's see what the definition of a development approval is. An administrative or quasi-judicial approval, so that's everything, made under, in accordance with Chapter 12, that is written and that is required prior to commencing development. Development approvals include zoning permits, special use permits, variances, certificates of appropriateness, permits issued, generally speaking, permits issued, building permits issued. So you can see that development approvals, which run with the land, include quite a few topics. Going back to page 5, one of the interesting things about Chapter 160D, Chapter 160D had been pushed by the School of Government and the zoning and land use regulation section of the State Bar for years. And the reason they were able to get the General Assembly to approve it was they made certain concessions to the development, to developers' lobby. And I'm going to close my discussion tonight with the biggest of those, but I'm going to say that as a surprise, because to me it's as significant a development as is the substantial increase of the Board of Adjustments authority. But there were other concessions as well, and these next two sections about permit choice and vested rights and the ability under 1202080 on page 7 regarding the ability to bring in a site-specific plan and get vesting for that. Those two provisions are very much the result of the lobbying efforts by developers and property owners. But one thing I mentioned earlier, that while 160D unified and consolidated and kind of simplified, I also told you that it wasn't a perfect marriage, that there were still some areas of confusion that result. So for example, in this vested right provision, which starts in 1202070 on page 5 and runs through page 7, you'll see that there are definitions for land development regulation, which I've checked. That definition, which you have to use for vested rights, is slightly different than the definition for development regulation that we looked at for everything else under Chapter 12 or 160D. So there's an example where, even though they unified everything, you still have to jump out of that and go someplace else to make sure you're right. The next section that I would draw your attention to is on page 10, starting on page 10. A very useful section defining conflicts of interest for town council, appointed boards, administrative staff, and quasi-judicial decisions. Something that will provide a lot of clarity from time to time when those issues come up in those situations. The other interesting one is E, resolution of objection. If an objection is raised to a board member's, and this could be any board, HPC deciding a COA, town council deciding a subdivision or a special use permit. If an objection is raised to a board member's participation at the hearing or prior to a vote and that member does not recuse himself based on a conflict of interest, the remaining members of the board shall by majority vote rule on that objection. So conflicts of interest are pretty well provided for in 160D. Getting back to the point Ms. Zielinski raised regarding Article 2, that's where I pulled planning and zoning, as we saw, from Article 2 and put it with all the other boards in Section 1204. You'll see planning and zoning, Board of Adjustment, Historic Preservation. They're all in one place at the present time. And the chairman is right. I would, because it was surprising to me. I hadn't read the Planning and Zoning Commission provisions for a number of years, and I've been with Planning and Zoning since 2014. And I was surprised about a couple of things. Composition, that's not the point. The thing that, if you go to page 13 of my document, PZC plays a much more major role than I realized in formulating the comprehensive plan. And that's laid out in F1 about that responsibility. But if you look at the bottom of page 13 and spilling over into the next page, there's a whole section on comprehensive plan where PZC will recommend the town council proposals in the comprehensive plan for the development of property, the location, character, and extent of streets, parkways, open spaces, the general location and expense and extent of public utilities and terminals, whether publicly or privately owned or operated, for water, light, sanitation, transportation, communication, and other purposes, and the removal, relocation, widening, etc. of streets, buildings, open spaces, properties, utilities, and terminals. So the comprehensive plan will have EZC's recommendations in it when it goes up to council. So it's a much more substantial role than I realized. The LUPC feeds into PZC, PZC then feeds that comprehensive plan to council. Also, part of PZC's duties are laid out in I and J. If you'll notice, I circled in I, shall. By statute, PZC reviews proposed amendments to zoning regulations. J, the town council may, but it doesn't have to, pass proposed amendments to subdivision regulations to PZC. But here's another thing that I thought was interesting about 160D. 160D makes a big deal early on, and that thread runs all the way through to the end about development regulations, which we've seen by the definition is much more than just zoning. Yet when it comes to review, and when it comes to adoption by PZC and the governing board of their own respective consistency statements, they never changed it to development regulations. They left it as zoning. So you all can review development regulations, and council can act on development regulations, and if they're not zoning, you don't have to worry about you don't have to issue a statement whether that change is consistent with the comprehensive plan. They let that limited to zoning despite the overall broadening of everything into development regulations, which I thought was interesting.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
Development. Are we talking about like subdivision development, or could it be the development of somebody building a multi-unit housing thing?
Let's go to the definition of development. The construction, erection, alteration, enlargement, renovation, repair, movement, or demolition of any structure. The excavation, grading, filling, clearing, or alteration of land, and the subdivision of land as defined by statute, but also later in Chapter 14. All that is development.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, can I point out a couple things here? Because I did, you know, in...
Where are we?
On your page 14, where you talk about the planning and zoning regulations. You just talked about the comprehensive plan. You go down to K, actually, there's a number of things that will come up tonight, and this is one of the reasons why I kind of made the proposal about rules of order. When you look at this, and I was surprised at the authority as well as the breadth that P&Z has. Mm-hmm. And a good example would be K, I think it is, because the word is shall there.
That's right, and this comes from the current.
Yeah, the Planning and Zoning Commission shall review and make recommendations to Town Council on the extent, location, design of all public structures and facilities, the acquisition and disposal of public properties, et cetera, et cetera. That probably has not been done in the past. I just point that out because I think that it really did surprise me as the authority. And again, when you look back here at the authority in terms of studies and things like that, which we'll come back to probably at a later agenda item here, that P&Z does have a fair amount of authority, and the word shall is in there several times.
Yeah, likewise, I was surprised when I reviewed K again as well. Yeah. I agree.
Because I know there may be a disposal of a public property sometime in the future that we've talked about that technically would have to come before P&Z because the word shall is in there.
Just as an aside, there are statutory procedures for disposal of property, so that would supplement as well. And I don't recall them per se. I have to look at that to see if DZC is statutorily given that role in the disposal of property, just as it's given that role in the code.
Yeah.
1204 of 20, which starts on 14, is the similar provisions for the board of adjustment. The thing that I would point out is that on 15D, except as provided by other applicable provisions, board of adjustments shall hear and decide appeals of administrative decisions. So again, we've gone from going to BOA for enforcement of the zoning ordinance to appeals of any there are a few exceptions, but 9 out of 10 administrative decisions now go to BOA. And it's just a substantial increase in their scope of responsibility. Historic preservation, this is where what council approved last month has been built in. We've already discussed the B1 resident, while the B1 property owner is being one of the members. And again, I thought Ms. Zielinski raised a good point. We need to go there. Property or insert or business owner. I think that was a good observation. I think we're all familiar with what HPC is going to do, but that shows, well, first of all, the powers and duties, not as significant perhaps in terms of their impact as PZCs, but they're laid out at the bottom of 16 under D. They run through the next page, through 7 on the next page. 7 is the hearing of COA applications. That's one of the reasons why I got to take it out of 15, because I've covered some of that here in 12. I didn't figure that out when we did 15. If you look at section 06, administration, enforcement, and appeals, this again is one of the...
before you go to 06, 12440. That should be commissions. We're missing a section there. That the oath of office should have been 50.
So it's numbered incorrectly?
No, we're missing an actual section. It's the appointment of boards and commissions. And then.
I'm sorry. Show me where.
It's 1204. You went on to 12.6, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 1204-40, and there's no 1204-50.
Why do we need 54?
Pardon? I'm only going by your budget.
It's just your table of contents does not match the body.
Yeah, the table of contents there shows appointment of boards and commissions, and I wasn't in here. Just to, I'm sure you have it, just fill it out.
Yeah, it might have. Either that or it's covered in the specific provisions for each of the bodies.
Okay.
But I'll make a note to check.
All right.
Good catch, thank you. Thank you very much. So, going to the new section, once I get there, administration, enforcement, and appeals. And again, this shows you the scope of the 160D changes. 1206.010, the provisions of this article shall apply to all development regulations. Again, we saw the definition for development regulations as being much more than just subdivision and zoning. It includes stormwater, includes erosion, sedimentation control, building and inspection, subdivisions. And even smaller, approvals smaller in scope than those things. 1206.020A, to the extent consistent with the scope of regulatory authority granted by this chapter, you need a development approval. It's interesting that the approvals can be issued electronically, provided that you lock in that password or whatever, encrypted password, whatever, to keep that digital development approval from being revised. I thought that was interesting. B simply lays out what staff has to do to notify the applicant of the particular development approval. There are numerous cases, and this really surprised me. As long as I've been practicing in these areas of the law, they've always used first-class mail. But nobody relies on first-class mail to make sure you've crossed your I's and dotted your I's and crossed your T's. You always use certified mail. So I was really surprised, unless it's just a notice of a public hearing. But in cases like this where you're notifying the applicant, I was surprised that the new statute said you could still rely on first-class mail. So every time that was there, I put or certified, because that's typically the practice that most municipalities, including this one, follows. C gives you the duration of approval, which would differ many times depending on the particular development regulation you're dealing with, but this kind of sets a general term that if nothing happens for a year, that the approval lapses because of that. D is changes. One of the things I will tell council is there's a couple of references in 160D that say, hey, look, to get the approval, sure, go through the process that that development regulation requires. But once you get that approval, town, you can make provisions for administrative approval of minor tweaks, provided that you build that authorization into the code and define what that minor work is. So somebody could get town council's approval of the final plat and whatever process the code requires for that, come back 6 months later and say, ooh, I want to make this minor change. That can be administratively approved, and you have to go back to town council. Actually, that's a bad example, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but just run with that example for a minute. If there was a minor change and the code allowed for administrative approval of that minor change, then that's what would happen. Right now, we don't have that. And you can make administrative approval for minor changes run all across all the development regulations, but that's something that council has to weigh in on. And that's a later project. We're not governed by the July 1 deadline. But the reason I said that was a bad example, I think, you know, and I have written over 100 pages of code for 2 weeks, and I've got a pretty good memory of where things are, but Not always. I've got them all spread out, and I'm looking here, cross-reading here, but I'm pretty sure that modifications to a subdivision plat may come back to planning and zoning. I have to keep my eye open for that.
Yeah, yeah, that's. I'm pretty sure it does, and not only that, we have to review it, but P&Z has to vote, and I believe I have to sign a subdivision.
Yes, I thought there was something about that. And
although I don't know that we're going to have that issue come up again.
Oh, I know.
We really don't have any land left.
I think we had like 1 in 7 years or something like that
for a
subdivision.
The last large parcel was the last one that P&Z did.
Was Fort Fisher, up by Fort Fisher.
That was the last large parcel.
I think I've only done two in 12 years.
Key Biscayne was developed as cinder block houses, and now they come in and somebody buys up all the lots and all the houses, knocks them down, and puts another subdivision up. So you never know.
Yeah, no, that's true. They could remove houses.
Bottom of 18, development approvals can be revoked. You go through the same process to revoke as you did to approve. Enforcement on the next page, page 19, you get a notice of violation. And you'll see that a notice of violation at the last sentence of paragraph A can be appealed to the Board of Adjustment. Stop work orders, again, appeal to the Board of Adjustment. Remedies, one of the questions I'll have for council is the reference to 168, 175 is fine. 175 says, hey, you can do A, B, C, D if you want in enforcing an ordinance. One of the things that allows you to do is to establish a civil penalty. You have civil penalties for some violations, but I'll ask council if they wanted to in the case of violating a development approval. And 1206-040 on 20 is the major situation, except as provided in KBC 1110-030E, which is appeal to the building inspector condemnation orders. They go to town council. KBC 1508-120-G4, appeals of decisions for minor work go to HPC. And subdivision plats, which are administrative decisions, go to Superior Court. So you can see, even though they're trying to streamline everything, we still go in different directions about different things. Except for those exceptions, any other administrative decision, which we saw how broad that was under the definitions, under any other development regulation, go to the Board of Adjustment. The remainder of that lays out the procedure that you follow. Who has standing to appeal? When do you appeal? The record of who gets the clerk for the public body sends the takes care of putting together the record and transmitting it. And if you look at, and this is another reason why I've got to change some of the text amendments for the historic district, 1206-050 lays out the quasi-judicial procedure for any board hearing having an evidentiary hearing. Now remember, evidentiary hearing is a quasi-judicial hearing. Rather than limit this provision to the Board of Adjustment, this applies to all boards. For example, town council does an evidentiary hearing on special use permits. HPC does an evidentiary hearing on COA permits. Board of Adjustment has an evidentiary hearing on appeals of administrative decisions and variances. So all the things that you need to know to for the town to comply with the proper procedure for quasi-judicial are laid out in 1206-050. And you can see, that's quite a list. The process is required, in other words, all the boards should follow it. Notice of hearing tells you how to do that. Administrative materials, you can send it to everybody ahead of the meeting, but if you do so, you got to send it to the appellant as well. Let me digress for a minute. One of the thoughts that I had about the current code was that in many cases it's bare boned. And I don't think that, and I think if it was not so bare boned, it would be much more of a useful resource for both staff and public. I'll give you a great example. In the code currently, the power, when they reference the Board of Adjustment, they say the powers and duties are equal to what 168.388 says. That's it. I mean, that's it. Under Chapter 12, we know now what they can hear and how they hear it and what we have to do. And that's a lot better than having to jump into the statute book from the code. It's like a cookbook recipe now, so it's all laid out. Presentation of evidence, acceptance of appearance of new issues. That's important to realize that an appellant may say, I'm appealing this because of A, but at the hearing, the appellant can bring up B, C, D, whatever else. If it's a surprise, then the board can continue the hearing. Boards making evidentiary decisions can issue subpoenas. I've never seen it happen, but I always wish that it had. I think that's an interesting power that all the boards that hear quasi-judicial matters have. H, appeals in the nature of certiorari. Some people may not understand what nature of certiorari means, and you might often hear the Supreme Court cert denied. Well, in certiorari means that the next court that you go to for certiorari is they're simply going to review what happened below. They're not going to take any new evidence. They're going to look at the record and decide whether it's a decision reached was right or wrong. That's what certiorari means. Voting is addressed. Four-fifths of the board for a variance. Everything else is majority. It tells you how to count if members are disqualified or there's a vacancy. Tells you what to do for decisions. And K tells you that every quasi-judicial decision can go to court, judicial review. And that's where my big surprise is when we get there, and we're almost there. Adopting, amending, and repealing development regulations are in Section 8. I'm not going to go through those except to say that everything you need to know to provide notice is laid out there. Notice is a little different if you're doing a text amendment versus a map amendment. But we used these same provisions when we provided public notice of the council's public hearing on the historic district regulations. Citizen comments, self-explanatory, but there's an interesting sentence there, and I'm not quite sure what it means. I've underlined it towards the bottom of 12A030. The premise of this section is if you have citizen comments, the clerk is going to submit those to the board prior to the legislative hearing. But they also provide that comments can be made with respect to an evidentiary or quasi-judicial hearing. But if I read it correctly, it seems to say that the only thing the clerk can pass on to the board making the evidentiary decision is the names and addresses of the people that made those comments without providing the comments themselves. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me unless it's designed to ensure an impartial decision, which is a fundamental due process right for quasi-judicial applicants and appellants. But if the proposed change is the subject of a quasi-judicial proceeding, such as, example, town council's hearing on a special use permit, the town clerk shall provide only the names and addresses of the individuals providing comment. So I guess that's cross-examination, even though you hardly ever see it in a special use permit hearing. It's certainly a constitutional right presented to the party and or the town, as is the requirement for an impartial decision. And I guess limiting the comments in those cases to name and address is you could issue a subpoena if you really want to question that person, but the person ought to be there to present as evidence and also to be available for cross-examination. I've addressed plan consistency for PZC and for governing board, which shows up on page 25, simply by noting that it still is what it's been, but it remains limited to zoning. Judicial review. This is an important one. 1210 and the last one. No, next to the last one. 1210.010 declaratory judgments. Legislative decisions on development regulations can go to court in a declaratory judgment action. Those are basically text amendments and zoning map amendments. And the bar for prevailing against those is so high that you hardly ever see those lawsuits. Appeals of quasi-judicial decisions. If HPC denies my COA, I go to BOA. If I don't like what BOA does, I can go to court in the nature of certiorari, and that court will review the BOA record to see if the decision was reached correctly. Appeals of decision on subdivision plats. The statute for that is quite convoluted because some municipalities decide subdivision plats as quasi-judicial. Some merely determine whether it meets the requirements set forth in the ordinance, and that's administrative. We're administrative, but rather than getting all that convoluted analysis, I simply refer the reader to the statute that is convoluted enough. Here's the killer, so to speak, 1210.040. And I want you to put yourself in the shoes of even a halfway competent lawyer. Except as otherwise provided in this section, a person with standing may bring an original civil action in state or federal court seeking declaratory relief, injunctive relief, damages, or any other remedies provided by law for the following claims. The ordinance is unconstitutional. The ordinance as it's applied is beyond the authority of the town exercising it. The ordinance constitutes a taking. It doesn't take much of a lawyer to make a claim based on one or two. So what this provision says, and it depends a little bit on what you're doing, but you can be in the midst of a development regulation procedure, get a decision, and although in some cases you have to go to BOA to jump through the rest of the hoops, in some cases you don't have to go to BOA. The bottom line is, either way, if that applicant is sophisticated enough and has got the funds to do it and has a lawyer sharp enough to figure it out, they're going to take you to court. They're going to take you to court and claim, hey, we got denied, but it's wrong because the development regulation is unconstitutional. We got denied or it's wrong because the town exercised its powers under that development regulation more than what that development regulation provided for. It doesn't take much to go to court on those claims. And the very important thing to note about is, and you may recall this from last fall, attorney's fees. Watch this. In any action which a city or county is a party, upon a finding by the court that the city or county violated the statute or case law that set forth unambiguous limits on its authority, the court shall award reasonable attorney's fees and costs to the party who successfully challenged the action. Further, in any action in which a city or county is a party, upon finding by the court that the city took action inconsistent with or in violation of yada yada yada, that has to do with vested rights, the court shall award reasonable attorney's fees and costs to the party who successfully challenged. In all other matters, the court may award reasonable attorney's fees and costs to the prevailing private litigant. Nothing in there gives the town the opportunity to seek attorney's fees if it wins. So this is one of the concessions that was made to the development lobby in exchange for passing the rest of 160D. But think about it. You've got a right to bring an action for broadly based claims, and if you win, the town pays your attorney's fees. Tell me whether that's going to result in litigation. I think that it will. Getting back to the end of the end, on page 27 is the rest of the stuff you have to do to bring that action. The last section is 12.10.050 statutes of limitation. A through F simply provides the time limits for going to court based on whatever particular item you're dealing with in that list. And that, my friends, is chapter 12. So you've done chapter 12, chapter 2, chapter 11, chapter 13, chapter 14. Next month, in about 10 minutes, you'll be finished with chapter 15. That'll bring us up to meeting the deadline by council for July 1. There'll be more 160D work after that. I've given you an example about the minor work authorization if they want it. There's a tremendous amount of cleanup of thankless chore that I mentioned last time. I got to change all the statutory references to 168 and 160D, and there's a few of them. And I'm also going to comb the code to make sure that references in the rest of the code are consistent with chapter 12. Any questions?
What did we do last month? Did we take a vote?
Oh, let me respond to that, because Ms. Zielinski raised a point, and technically it's correct. PZC is only responsible for approving and for reviewing and reporting on zoning amendments. But all of this affects what PZC does, and council is aware that we'd be reviewing this with PZC. So while there's not a provision I can point to that provides this, except for that one I mentioned earlier about PZC, council can request that. Council knew about it. You all need to know about it. That's why we're here. I think we did vote last time. I'm not quite sure. Or maybe we reached a consensus.
Yeah,
we
did vote.
Is it in the
minutes? You voted in order to pass it on to council.
Right.
Yeah, looking at the minutes, you made a recommendation to town council to submit them.
Okay.
And along those lines, there's no wiggle.
Is there any further discussion, questions? Does somebody like to make a motion to submit? How did we word it last time? A recommendation to?
Sorry, the town council.
I had it in front of me.
Recommendation to town council to adopt the
proposed
text amendments to chapters
2, 12, and 13.
I'll go ahead and make that motion since I said it.
With one revision suggested.
Okay.
Yeah, you just made the motion to forward the recommendations to town council for adoption.
Okay. For chapter 2, 12, and 13. Is there a second?
Along with the revision.
Along with the revision, yes.
Yeah. Second.
Is there any further discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nope. Okay, that brings us to, do we need a break at all? I know we've been going for almost 2 hours now. Nope. Okay, good. That brings us to discussion of the oath of office for the alternate member, Joe. What's that?
Discharge my duties as an alternate member of the Planning and Zoning Commission for the town of Curie Beach, so help me God.
Yay!
Now you can be sued too.
The fact you did that after sitting through this is impressive.
Can I have your folder?
Oh, that was very sick.
All right, just one.
He does. Yeah. Thank you.
All right, last agenda item. And before we get started on that, let me ask Mandy a question here. When I started on P&Z probably 12 some odd years ago, there was kind of an automatic amount of money, just a couple thousand dollars, that was allocated in the budget to planning and zoning. And I don't think we ever spent it. Is that still, does P&Z have an allocation in the budget? It was okay. It was specifically to P&Z originally, and then I haven't heard much about it the last couple of years. But I remember it being $3,000 to $5,000, and I don't think we ever spent it at all.
It's been given back since then. If you never spent it,
I'm sure it doesn't roll. But that'd be great. We'd be all to Las Vegas and roll.
T-shirts. You did say, wasn't it like $350 or something for a study downtown?
That was the HPC. That was specifically allocated to the HPC.
Oh, I see.
But this is a P&Z.
We had some money budgeted last year, and that was used for your architectural design standards.
That's an HPC that was...
It didn't have a line item,
okay.
Did you need something?
Well, no, that's just preliminary to what may be coming up in our next discussion. Anyway, the second discussion, or the second thing I want to point out, well, let me kind of frame this before I kind of turn over to this agenda item. For the last couple of months, there's been a discussion about bike paths and all that sort of thing. And so, as a chairperson, I'm very sensitive that whenever there's a bit of a confusion or debate about what appears on the agenda and what we can talk about and decide, I kind of go back to the policies. And that's why I, you know, went back to the policies. I spent several hours and ended up with these recommendations for the point of order. So just to let everybody know that I just didn't pull these out of the air just thinking, boy, we need some kind of point of order here. And this kind of leads into the next agenda item. I was asked to put this on the agenda by Ken, and it is on the agenda for discussion right now. One of the issues that was floating back and forth with a number of different emails and letters and so forth had to do whether P&Z has the authority to look at bike paths. And so, again, in terms of kind of this general discussion several weeks ago, I did look at chapter, what I guess now is chapter 12. And it looks like here, under basic and special studies, and I did read this, and this is part of why I was concerned about these protocol issues. It says, in addition, the commission may make, cause to make, or obtain special studies on location adequacy of specific facilities, which may include but are not limited to studies of housing, commercial, and industrial facilities, schools, parks, playgrounds, recreation facilities, public and private utilities, traffic, transportation, and parking facilities. So with that in mind, I felt it was appropriate to at least have it on the agenda, since a member of the commission did ask to have it put on the agenda. So that brings us to this agenda item on Curie Beach bike path, and I'm going to turn this over to Ken since he asked to have it put on.
Probably it was my fault.
What? I'm sorry, what?
I'm sorry, just a quick question. So what does this have to do with the budget?
Because technically if there's a budget, P&Z could ask that a study be done for bike paths.
Okay.
We're not asking for that, but I just wanted to, because that is, when I read these two things, that is a possibility. We may not approve it, may not want to do it, but I just wanted to see if there was money in there before we get down that path.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt, Ken.
No, you're fine. Like I said, it probably was this whole thing started with me selecting the wrong title for this. My main concern was looking, and this came to me by several residents who looked at the 2006 plan and said, we have a current plan that the town paid money for that discusses bike paths, and it discusses Dow Road and other paths, and it takes credit for placing bike lanes on 421. So that started me thinking, and the reason I want to put it on the agenda is that, and after seeing 160D, I think it's appropriate. When things like this come up into town that are a major impact to a large section of the town, I think we, even though it's a commission, I think we ought to be involved in it, and so that we could ask questions. I mean, the current survey has no questions concerning what is being proposed. It has questions on bike paths, whether you do it or not, but it's like, it's this group that's doing it, but they're not, they just are not part of the real planning process in my mind. So the real thing was, I want to say to ask the P&Z members is that when things like this come up, bike route, which is, I've been admonished for saying the wrong thing all the time, the bike route should have come here as part of the land use plan, since you were changing the last official land use plan and you were putting in something, and then also it should be part of the current use. If the land use plan is not something that we're going to hold up to, why are we paying $35,000 for it this year? So my big thing is in the land use plan, as 160D has talked about, we are supposed to be planning. It talks about traffic, it talks about transportation. That's something that should have been presented to, I think, something should be presented to the board so we could ask questions. We could make sure that the entire town had been represented. And so I just think it's a function of the Planning and Zoning Board to make a recommendation to town council on something that is being changed from the 2006 land use plan. So that was my issue, not the path itself, but the process that they were being used. And any change to the 2006 plan that we, if you look at the front page, it's the council and us are the two main categories of that. If it's not worth the paper it's written on, then why are we doing it? That's just my view.
I do know the committee's doing a bike pedestrian plan.
Right, but it's already in the 2006 plan.
Yeah, I'm a little confused because nothing has been written in terms of the new plan. Nothing's been done.
There's been a lot done.
About the new land use plan.
They've done a process where ARC, which I've never been able to see this, ARC supposedly did training for walking, and they've walked the bike path.
There may be committee, whatever that committee is, there may be actions about that.
Well, okay, let's say nothing's been done yet, and that's a good point.
I'm talking about the land use plan. Nothing's been done.
No, we have a land use plan. That's a 2006, the existing one.
It has to be updated.
But it's not updated. So the existing land use plan that we're under is 2006.
So
right? Your
comments concern the 2006 plan?
Yeah.
If I could kind of jump in, I think the issue is that Ken, as a member of the P&Z, felt that discussion of the bike route should have...
Anything. Let's not just go bike route, but that's the hottest.
Well, that's the agenda item. Yeah, okay. So... But discussion of things like the bike route should have come before planning and zoning. It's okay perfectly to have a separate committee to look at this. But P&Z members cannot be part of that committee, from what I understand, okay, because we're restricted from being, which I think is correct. So Ken's opinion was that P&Z should have been involved in a discussion of the bike route because it falls under the purview of P&Z. There are other members of town council that do not feel the same way. And that's where the discussion was and why I'm trying to manage this process, as best I can. So it was decided to put it on the agenda tonight for discussion. But I'm not quite sure what the discussion is, other than maybe being, you know, I mean, what would you propose that the P&Z do, given that we do have a bike committee that has made a set of recommendations?
I guess I'm looking at what's our relationship to the existing land use plan. Are we the overseer? And I'll have to admit, until this person came up to me, I did not read the land use plan in detail, and it's really, which is something we all should do, even though it's an old one, is that once the land use plan comes out and we approve it along with, or we recommend approval along with council, any changes to that, does that mean that we no longer have anything to do with it? Or if they change the land use plan, or change an objective in the land use plan, should that come before us because it's changing the plan? So it isn't so much, you know, the committees can do, you have to, all the committees, but in this case, it was a direct, in my mind, a direct change to the 2006 land use plan. I realize we're doing another one, but that...
What was the change?
Yeah,
that's what paving the path from spot?
No, it's... The
thing that's changed. Nobody else has changed. Everything else is still under study.
Can I answer your question? Okay, thank you. In the land use plan on 2006, it says that the town will look to develop a bike path along Dow Road and other areas. Doesn't say what they are, and it took credit for the bike lanes on there. It didn't say anything about using public streets. That is a change in the land use plan.
How
well, it's not a change. What you're arguing is that it's inconsistent with the land use plan.
Okay, I got two people. Which one's going to talk?
If I could jump in.
Look, all I'm trying to say is that what's the relation with the land use plan and Planning Zoning Commission?
Can I add something?
Sure.
And just to further Ken's point, just because we just went through this chapter 12, where it says the powers and duties for planning and zoning, and you, as you said, Jim, there are a number of things that planning and zoning is responsible for. And I think that kind of backs up what Ken is saying, that we're here to do this work, and yet being sidestepped by appointing another committee. Am I saying that right?
Well, I'm linking it to the land use plan. And if the land use plan, the new one comes out and has no provision for anything, and then they do it, well, then why wasn't it in the plan? I mean, I've always had a problem with the land use plan. If the land use plan is going to be used, then it ought, and this hasn't been done yet, then this ought to be stated in the plan. This is what the town's going to do in the new one.
But
there's no question in the survey, there's no question for that. So if the town says, yep, we think this is the best thing to do, but we're not going to put it in the land use plan in 2013, we're not going to ask anybody about it. That doesn't seem...
Not asking about it doesn't mean that's not going to be in the plan. The committee's still researching. They have a grant to do a bike path study, so they're still doing their due diligence, and then that will be incorporated in, I promise you.
If I can jump in, because what I'm hearing a conversation is that there's two issues here. One is that the land use plan that we're still operating under had some sort of a recommendation or designation for the bike route. And that a proposed bike route has come out that is inconsistent, and that it's not that it's a new, it's inconsistent. That's your argument, is that there's an inconsistency with the current land use plan. The second issue I hear is that a general feeling that even though there is a bike committee working on this and has a grant, that somehow P&Z should be involved or informed or something as per the responsibilities of the P&Z for, and again, that's why I read that particular section. So what I'm hearing is that there's two issues. One is the inconsistency with the existing land use plan, which really isn't a P&Z issue. The second is the process where you feel P&Z should be involved somehow with determining the appropriate bike route. I'm trying to summarize.
You said that the land use plan is not an issue for P&Z?
No. What I'm saying is the recommendation about the bike route going someplace other than Dow, or the language that's used in the land use plan, that what I'm hearing you say, and I've been privy to all these emails too, that there's an inconsistency with what is being recommended versus what is in the 2006 land use plan. I think that summarizes that. The issue that you just also talked about is that you feel that P&Z, because of the responsibilities of P&Z, should be involved with somehow with studies or projects related to coming up with recreational / bike route. I'm just trying to summarize the concern.
And if it's going to go into a plan that we're paying a lot of money for, that we end up one of the signatures on it, basically.
Well, certainly what I think we heard in that respect is that, according to Mr. Eldridge, is that the Land Use Plan Committee will then submit and for review to the P&Z.
No, that's not the way it's going to work. Right?
We haven't gotten anywhere yet other than deciding to spend money to pay the section between SWAT and Settler so that people can ride their bikes there without having to dismount and walk them across that gravel block.
Well, I'm not, like I said, mine is, well, that is the topic. My thing is more, what's our relation to the land use plan, and when things change in the land use plan, should we be involved in it, no matter where it comes from? And if that is, no, Ken, the land use plan is not something when it's over, you sign it and say it's a good thing for the next 10 years, but if anything changes, then don't worry about it.
Do you have a recommendation? Because, again, we like to do recommendations here. Do you have a recommendation that you would like to make for discussion?
I think the recommendation is that once the land use plan has been officially adopted and there are items within that land use plan, that once the town the town wants to change those, that we should look at it.
Okay. Can I ask Joseph, is the town going to change or differ from the 2006, and again, Ken just read that section having to do with bike paths or bike routes, is the town going to change from the 2006 land use plan prior to the development of our current effort to revise the land use plan?
I'm sure when they get the study back, that they will bring that forward to us, and then at that point it'll be incorporated into the land use plan when we get to the appropriate chapter.
Will there be any decisions by the town council about bike routes?
I don't know how that's going to apply, because they're recommending 4th, 5th, or 6th, or settlers, as the appropriate path to take people from the Greenway in Carolina Beach.
Okay. The reason, because from what Mr. Eldridge said currently, is that the way, because that's a comprehensive plan, is that the Land Use Plan Committee will put together the land use plan. That will then come to the planning and zoning, so we'll have a chance to review that and then forward that with recommendations to the town council.
That's where it's going to play out.
But in the meantime, because it's going to be probably 2 years before the adoption of the land use plan,
By next July.
Well, in the meantime, if that study comes back saying that, yes, 4th Avenue South would be the best way to get down to E and then out to Fort Fisher, would town council be adopting that despite the fact that the current land use plan states that there'll be a bike pathway from the north end of the island down to the aquarium along Dow Road? It says that in the land use plan.
Did you say it said in other undetermined or other
it
areas?
It said other areas.
Other
yes,
areas.
It did say that, yes.
Well, that seems to open it up.
I mean, that opens that up wide open.
Okay.
To include settlers.
Okay. But
or
fed,
any other
or
area. I mean,
or
if it says
Boulevard.
Other areas, I mean.
But I agree, Mandy, it does do that. But I think the other thing is that if that is what they are thinking about putting in the plan, then why not put that question on the survey at one of the things that you can say, are you in favor, unfavor, or not? And not only settlers, I mean any of the pathways. Why would you not, since you did it with Dow Road, and people said yes, no, maybe, why would you not have that question in the current land use plan so people can say yes, no, maybe?
I think I can answer that because I was involved, with some of the questions. The questionnaire for the land use planning process is a little broader than that. Okay, that you're dealing with broader specific issues that people have concerns about. We have a separate study that sounds like it's going to take place, which is going to look at very specific things related to bike routes and all that type of thing. So you wouldn't have, I don't think, in a land use plan survey,
it has
specific roads, designating roads and
bike. No, I'm not saying this.
Okay.
It has questions now about bike paths.
Well, the importance of bike paths, but not any routes, but it talks about, I think, the importance of bike paths.
You ask 90% of the people and just say, what did that mean? And I shouldn't say that because I don't know. I said my concern. I think I'm concerned that the land use plan, if we approve it, we ought to look at when changes happen to it. That was the main.
And whenever we get that study back, we will have a public hearing on that, and that we will have a conversation about whatever.
That's a new thing. Everybody that said they talked to the mayor and all said they were not. That we're not going to have a public hearing, but it's.
I doubt I would believe it.
What? But no, the mayor said to me that we did not have a public hearing to change 25 miles an hour. We don't need a public hearing for this.
I think.
I have an email from.
Okay, if I'm.
That's a speed limit. That's not a bike route.
Okay. Let's stay on target here on task. From a P&Z perspective. What I might recommend, and again, this is certainly open to vote, and it is going to be a majority vote, but I would certainly recommend that when the study is done by the bike committee, that the P&Z have an opportunity to review that. I think that fits in with the responsibilities and the purview of the P&Z, based upon Ken's recommendation that. Certainly, you can have special committees looking at certain things, but I think based upon what we've talked about, I think it'd be appropriate to have that submitted to P&Z for comment and discussion.
There's going to be lots of public hearings for.
But
the bike committee, the land use plan will have public hearings, so there'll be plenty of room for discussion.
If I could ask our attorney a question, the land use plan itself, of what type of legal document is that? Does the land use plan tie the town to fulfill the things that are in the land use plan?
Zoning decisions in particular, no, I don't think the hard to answer that question. Let me put it to you this way. The comprehensive plan is not necessarily binding upon the town. It's a guiding document. I was just looking to see, that's point one. Point two, zoning decisions I mean, amendments to the zoning regulations, when reviewed by PZC and acted on by council, need to address, not required to be consistent, but need to address consistency with the comprehensive plan. So number one, it's a guiding document, not a binding document. Number two, whether or not a proposed zoning amendment is consistent with the comprehensive plan is addressed by PZC and town council. Number three, PZC's consistency statement is what I call those, is not binding on council. Number four, if council adopts a zoning amendment that is inconsistent with the comprehensive plan, by operation of law, that plan and that future land use map is automatically amended to be, I hate to use this word, consistent with that inconsistency. Number four or five, whatever number it is. You would think, and this is one of the, what I think is one of the shortcomings of 160D and one of the things I was just trying to get an answer to. If I had written 160D, I would have made that same set of points that I just mentioned to you applicable to all relevant development regulations and not just zoning. Because I don't know whether the depiction of a bike path on a zoning map or the provision of a bike path is a zoning matter per se. I might be able to fit it under some other development regulation or come up with a development regulation where it fits. But the whole business about whether a development regulation is consistent or inconsistent, and if inconsistent, automatically amends the comprehensive plan to that extent, does not apply to the development regulations in general, but only to zoning amendments. Does that give you any guidance?
Ken, do you have a specific motion that you would like
us to... What you just said was, like I said, I'm...
I mean, that's more of a request than a motion.
May I say one thing?
Go ahead.
I'm not addressing... Here's my take on it, for better or for worse. I will assume that the biped, I may have the name wrong, but the biped committee, I'm assuming that those recommendations will be processed, filtered, discussed, reviewed, included in the land use planning committee's discussions and considerations, and will also go up to PZC when the committee is ready to transmit its recommendations and proposals to PZC, and certainly by code. And by statute, PZC plays a major role in the proposed comprehensive plan that is passed on to council. So I think that in the real world, I think the Bike Peds Committee's recommendations will get to LUPC and PZC and therefore to council, because PZC plays a major role in the comprehensive plan.
I mean, that's a reasonable process. That's fine.
I think that's going to happen. And I think it's entirely possible for a committee to come up with a recommendation that's inconsistent with the plan, because the plan is not binding, even on council. It's a guiding document. For example, I was at a, to use 160D terminology, I was at a legislative hearing once upon a time on a proposed amendment to a zoning regulation, and my challenge for the group of people that I was representing opposed to that particular regulation was, hey, it's not consistent with your comprehensive plan. Well, that didn't get any traction, but it's a good argument, but that's all that, and the response was, this is just a planning document, it's not, you're not.
A very expensive planning document.
Sure.
Yeah.
But you're going to have those biped proposals will 100% be reviewed by PZC,
yeah,
when they put together the comprehensive plan to pass on to council. In the meantime, I think it's entirely...
It could be underground utilities, it could be anything, but so the plan's not binding.
And PZC has a major role in what comprehensive plan goes to council.
So if that's the case, then we're going to look at it before it gets implemented, what you're saying.
Exactly right. You're going to form, you're going to produce a lot of what's going to
happen. Andy turned around and looked at him real quick.
No, I'm just trying to understand your question. Because to me, I understand what Jim's saying about how things are incorporated into the comprehensive plan, and then it goes to the committee, and then it comes to you. But it sounds like what you're saying is you want anything having to do with anything with the bike, pedestrian, and then I'm just trying to understand, so help me. That's
he wants is to be, he doesn't want people walking and biking down the street.
No, I'm saying, so like, if the land use plan is completed, and the bike ped committee comes up with something else, and the plan's completed, and we're 2 years into the plan, and they come up with something that is cutting over this corner instead of this corner for a safety thing, are you saying you want those things brought to P&Z prior to going to council so that you guys can provide your comments? That's what I'm trying to understand, so that we can follow the process with the committee.
Well, first of all, anything goes into the comprehensive plan based on 160D now, we ought to look at it.
That's right.
That's no argument there.
You just want to be clear. Do we understand that, let's say, this bike path is recommended, say, you know, in 6 months from now, prior to the adoption or even our review of the, you know, land use plan recommendations? This study comes back, the bike committee goes to town council and says, this is what this study suggests we do. Are you saying that you want them to bring that recommendation to planning and zoning first, or because they could just present it to town council and then town council?
It would be a nice independent review of it, sure, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I know Mr. Eldridge wants to say something, but this is why I was concerned about the rules and procedures, because the issue is whether this discussion is appropriate in P&Z, okay, and whether it should be on the agenda at all. So looking at, I think, the relatively broad responsibilities of P&Z, if a P&Z member brings it up, it is appropriate to have it on the agenda. Now, it doesn't mean that everything, I mean, you talk about utilities, well, you know, utilities wouldn't be on the agenda unless a P&Z member brings it up. But in this particular case, we were asked to put it on the agenda by a P&Z member. And that's why I look very carefully at the procedures and also the rules and responsibilities. And looking at that one section where it looks like recreational type of things are technically under the purview of P&Z, that an individual member has the right to put that on the agenda. And that's why we're talking about it right now. Now, because it's on the agenda, doesn't mean that the P&Z has to act on that.
That's true.
Okay, so, and that's kind of where we're at right now, is what sort of action needs to take place given that a member of the P&Z has raised the issue.
So the agenda item is discussion of the Curie Beach bike path.
And I started my discussion by saying I apologize that
this
was not
isn't
really...
Okay, all right, so you think the title's wrong. Right, so...
And that's my fault.
Okay.
That's my fault. That's why I said it was really more of our relationship with the land use plan and changes to the land use plan that don't come through us. And what I've heard is land use plan is a suggested document. If people want to change the land use plan, even though there's something on it, I guess they don't have to come to us.
No, that's not correct.
All right, well, let's see.
Let me read you a couple of things to add to the discussion. Adoption and amendment of a comprehensive plan is a legislative decision that follows the process mandated for zoning text amendments, which includes BZC review and comment.
Okay.
Plans adopted under this chapter shall be advisory in nature without independent regulatory effect. Plans adopted under this chapter do not expand, diminish, or alter the scope of authority for development regulations. Plans adopted under this section, including amendments thereto, shall be considered by the planning board and the governing board. So, if somebody wants to, and that somebody could also be PZC, if somebody wants to amend the comprehensive plan, you go through the same process that you go through for amending a zoning text amendment. So if something comes up,
that's what I'm saying.
If something comes up and you don't like it, you can ask if BZC wants to amend the comprehensive plan to synchronize with whatever you're dealing with and pass that on the council as a text amendment.
So anyway, we've had a discussion, and that is the agenda item. And you know, and I'm going to follow Robert's rules of order right here, because we should limit our discussion to the agenda item and the, as it's presented.
Well,
so,
I mean, you can limit it now, but you've already had a whole discussion.
Well, but that's perfect.
About something that's not on the agenda.
No, it's a discussion. I mean, the discussion's fine, but I don't feel that we should take a vote. This is a discussion on anything.
But it's not an agenda item.
What a discussion?
Well, that might be my fault. I didn't understand the subtle differences between the title you chose.
Yeah, and that's, I should have never, actually I started to amend the memoir. But yeah, but what I hear you, what I've heard, based on 160D, it's our purview.
Is what?
It's our purview.
Yeah, it comes. I'll answer that question, then I'm not going to engage in any more non-agenda discussion.
All right.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So anyway, we've had a discussion about a quasi-agenda item. Is there any further discussion? Okay. I don't feel that the agenda item presents an opportunity for any vote, so we've had the discussion. And there's some recommendations that, you know, might be taken back to the LVP regarding this. So, but unless there's any further discussion, that brings us to the end of the agenda. And is there a motion to adjourn?
No, let's keep going. Okay. I move to adjourn.
Is there a second? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye.